through extremely important experiences which are of great concern to all of us, may I ask you to say a few words?
Thank you very much.
Thank you
very much. The fact that we are calling this morning a session on European anti-Semitism, obviously it strikes everyone that there are a number of countries in Europe for whom we would want to have chairs and do not, and who will not be joining us. We have spent a week in the Soviet Union, just a week prior to going to Israel to attend the International Conference on Soviet Jewry. It is chutzpahdik to report on behalf of the community when it is not able through its own representatives to speak through its own eyes. But we did have an encounter with a good number of Jews in Leningrad, in Moscow, refuseniks, and just plain Jews in various places. It's not a scientific survey. A series of impressions, but I suppose they would want us to share, with particularly with this group, the sense of hardening of their situation, which continues to press upon them, and the flickering of hope. There had been some pause in anticipation of a change in leadership, anxiously looking for some signs. Those signs have not been forthcoming, and in fact there are indications of not only continuing the direction, but to some extent creating even more difficulty. The particular problem of the refuseniks is complicated by the fact that as part of anti-Israel propaganda, as an approach to dealing with their Jewish problem, we're able to sadly identify a spillover into the atmosphere that has crossed the line between what might accept as a point of view political comment on Israel into an atmosphere which has bred really an unleashing of what we would call old anti-Semitism on very fertile soil. And so we have reports, particularly in the provinces, of assaults upon Jews who are not refuseniks, with no relationship to the refusenik problem. We have stories about applications for normal advancement, whether it's the institutions of higher learning or other points along the path of personal growth and development, particularly for young people, that because of the suspicion that the Jews have begun to be regarded all the way down the line of avarachniks, of severe double standards in testing for qualification, apparently fairly overt, some academicians describing a kind of freezing off of them from their colleagues, of long relationship in academic institutions. Collegiality of the academy, having had walls built around them, cutting them off, a whole series of things that make that report a very sad one, and in some aspects, I think, potentially a very dangerous one. The conference itself in Israel ended with a declaration, more or less, as we all would have expected. The impact value of that conference is something that is yet to be seen. If nothing else, at least it allowed a group of people to come together to reaffirm in a congregation of Jews their commitment to these efforts, because the efforts will be on, and ought to be on, more than one line. That's the framework to the individual stories that take up the morning, and it's not the place. I would like to say a word or two about this gathering this morning. I know that I hope that you sense coming from the United States and from the Jewish community of the United States, and through various of its arms, a continuing deep fraternal interest, that's a very weak word, a brotherly interest and concern about Jewish communities throughout Europe. We see gatherings of this kind from the people who are on those fronts as an important contribution to our own understanding. One almost doesn't have to have a conference. If I listen merely to your titles of the positions that you hold, dealing with anti-Semitism, it is clear that we live in an atmosphere where that concern has to have a certain priority in our thinking and in our responses. Our attitude toward these matters, of course, is to listen first before one shoots from the hip, speaks out on someone else's behalf. And back home, we're anxiously awaiting the results of your reports so that we can have them in as part of our thinking as we move on together in the perpetuation and enrichment of Jewish life. It's nice to be with you, friends.
Thank you, Nathan. Luckily, we have quite a number of hours ahead of us to discuss in a brotherly way the problems.
Me too, but the panelists are going to kill me.
Well, coming from me, we can generally use these terms. Since it is really a unique opportunity to have as keen an observer as Maynard here with us, and I know he has to leave before the end of the morning, if anybody cares to ask some specific questions on his experience, go ahead, and then we will start our debate.
May I just add that I have invited a few participating observers, of which Mr. Azoulay is one. Mr. Azoulay knows a colleague there who is waving his hand. Would you like to introduce yourself, as we all have done just before you arrived?
Just a few words to say that I am here as a president of a group of Moroccan Jewish who are living in France. And the name is Aidan Ken Taylor. We had two in our community, some specific problem in the anti-Semitism chapter, but I'm very interested by listening to you and complete my knowledge.
Please, ask one question. Is anybody asking
questions? I have one question. I'd like to know whether this discrimination is not known to the Soviet Jews.
How do you mean voluntary?
The persons who more people because they see that the Jews are being Jewish because they're all going to be Jewish because they want to be Jewish.
Yes. I think what you have is a phenomenon where the tone is set from above. Particular manifestations may not be the result of a precise directive to say and do this, but the atmosphere is created where it is almost okay to do that. It is perceived as a reflection of the basic policies under which things are being conducted. We encountered ourselves particular difficulties, and in some discussions, which I don't want to blow up out of their realistic proportion, which is very small, with the officials and describing some of this, what you get all of that was ignorance. But the ignorance that is allowed free flow, the type of thing I mean is, here's a state policy that outlaws anti-Semitism by constitution. Okay. Refusniks, one problem. The matters have come to the point now where people report to us a turndown. And the apparatchnik is asked why, what is the reason? The kind of answer you get is whatever reason pleases you most. I want you to be happy. So you decide what is the reason that makes you happiest. But it's a kind of stick and arrogance that is perceived by people at these levels as reflecting the attitude toward the problems that the other kinds of things of if Jews are perceived as dangerous and somehow inauthentic members of the society at the faculties, the turning away may not be the result of a direct order from somewhere, do not fraternize. It is perceived in terms of one's own career, the perception of oneself, that you're not too involved with these people because it might rub off on you. There was a report of a new game that has evolved in Leningrad, and presumably from our reporter spontaneously, where in playgrounds, and these are teenagers at the high school level, a game called concentration camp. The kids pick out a concentration camp victim, invariably a Jewish kid, and he's given a number, and for 3-4 days the game is you only refer to him with that number. Now, no one is able to say that a directive came down from the Politburo to create this, but the atmosphere of other things that come from there make it, the Soviet society, if you know you're doing something wrong, you feel it instinctively, that is not permitted and not encouraged and is somewhat dangerous to do. These kinds of expressions and manifestations are not perceived that way. On the contrary, they are perceived as reflecting an overall attitude that the society is permitting and is a consequence of its policy. I think we have to be very cautious about saying they're directed, but it doesn't take much social science insight to perceive what happens to an atmosphere when these sorts of things happen here and then play out in various ways in daily life.
In your arrival, Mr. Hagenberg of Hunningwald.
I'm sorry. Hi.
Did you detect any expectations or apprehensions focused on the succession of Andropov, on the fact that Andropov is in power now?
Whenever there is a change, one pauses to hold one's breath to see whether it will be the same, it will be worse, it will be better. Clearly, a change is a moment of anticipation and hope getting to rekindle. There is a particular case of a refusnik that was very disturbing to the refusnik community because there was a turndown just on last Thursday of a man who was born in Chicago, went to the Soviet Union at age 19 with his parents who were communist idealists, and as was he, who served the Soviet Union for 50 years. He was the English voice of Radio Moscow for many years. Abe Stolen. He holds American citizenship, was born in the United States, and according to him, never opted for Soviet citizenship. He and our embassy there, the United States, has a claim on him, has pushed the matter continuously. He's in a special case, and he's been in refusal now a number of years, and he was turned down against Thursday. This sent waves of disappointment through the refusnik community because this represented an easy case which, without precedent, could have said, well, he has an American passport. And there was an understandable sinking of feeling of what they may be up against when at this particular moment, they knew he was up for reconsideration and were waiting to hear, and then the news came, and it was down. There is no, one hears all kinds of stories, and Andropov doesn't yet have his hands on things, stories that maybe he was in trouble, he didn't appear at the International Women's thing, so right away things start to whisper, which is really a symptom of the uncertainty and the anxiety. But there is nothing that is happening that has given them any grounds.
Thank you.
That's
really interesting. I believe it's no understatement to say that in the last few months, Jewry, world Jewry, and European Jewry in particular, has undergone one of its worst and deepest political, moral, existential crises in its history over the past 40 years since World War II. Therefore, I think it's no understatement to believe that it is extremely important for us to be here together and to compare notes, so to speak. Now, how are we going to compare notes? Somebody suggested that first we elect the big ones in the European family talk. I frankly believe that since we are all big and small on the same boat, we should just follow the alphabetical order. We mix big and small. I think it's fair enough if you agree. So if this, you agree to follow the alphabetical order, then I would like to ask the madman.
Okay.
How
long am I supposed to?
Can you say 5 minutes?
Whether?
We are elastic and concise.
Oh, we don't have a time to talk about it.
Okay.
Concise and elastic is the first time.
Well, if there is anything special about Austrian antisemitism, well, it has a long tradition, it was always very strong. If there's anything important to say, the first thing is that there's no—it's an typical antisemitism without Jews. 1% of the population. Time and again, there was the question of people having Jewish relatives or being themselves of Jewish origin shouldn't answer our questionnaires. And there we had 3% or so people saying that they are of Jewish origin, besides the 0.1% having being in the Israelite community. If you ask people what percentage they guess that the Jewish population in Austria is, it's up to 30% what people guess. And this is one of the main indicators of antisemitism. If you ask persons how many Jews live in your society, the higher they guess, the more this is a very good indicator, at least in the Austrian case. And I could show you later on, I could show you some of the data, which are very impressive. So people didn't even recognize the fact that after the they think there are more Jews living in Austria than before the Holocaust. They just do not acknowledge the fact that Jews have been murdered, driven out. This is not, it just didn't come to their mind. One of the effects of this is that the majority of Austrians never had any contact with any Jew. And again, we asked people if you rank them according to their contact and the frequency of contact starts Jews, the more contacts they have, the more friendly they are. The less contacts they have, the more anti-Semitic they are. There are regions where, since generations, no person ever could have the chance to see any Jew, to meet any Jew, and they are most hostile. This is very, very clear, and this is it's an understandable phenomenon, but still it cannot be pointed out too much that this is, and I can again present you some very impressive tables of how this relates. Then a second phenomenon, which I call is anti-Semitism without anti-Semites, which means it's a forbidden prejudice, it's not allowed to be expressed, it's no ideology any longer, it's no political anti-Semitism in the traditional sense any longer. It's pushed, so to speak, into the underground of privacy. It's a simple private phenomenon, it's no political phenomenon any longer, as for example in Poland, where I stayed last year as a visiting professor. There you have the traditional political anti-Semitism, which is manipulated from above. You don't have this in Austria, but you have a strong anti-Semitism within politics, which is something different. It comes up again and again. For example, Chancellor Kreisky, when he first ran for his office, his opposite candidate was presented as a real Austrian against Chancellor Kreisky, who was known to be of Jewish origin. I mean, you know all this story. Whenever there is a minister appointed to his office being found of having had Nazi past, all of this, time and again it comes up, the whole controversy between Simon Wiesenthal and Chancellor Kreisky. All these episodes, all the time, kind of crystallized the old anti-Semitism. And what you have is that one of the main focuses of anti-Semitism is the relation to the Nazi past. You have two focuses in general. One is the attitudes toward Israel, the other one is the impact of the Nazi past. And this is one of the, so to speak, allowed expressions of anti-Semitism. So people say, well, there should be an end to this processes against war criminals, for example. We had a middle class sample asking people, should there be still processes against war criminals? 83% said no. There is this neo-Nazi propaganda about not 6 million Jews having been killed in the concentration camps. 38% of the middle class Austrians, to some extent, say, well, there may be some truth in this. 88% said, well, there must be an end to all this talking about it. So this is a very strong focus of anti-Semitism, and this is one which a person can deny to be anti-Semitic in saying, well, you know, let's just finish this and let's not talk about it any longer. And this is, so to speak, an allowed, so socially allowed expression of anti-Semitism. Another phenomenon is that compared to other prejudices, it's very exceptional. So for example, you have in almost, relating to almost all the other prejudices, you have a strong difference between the generations. Not so with anti-Semitism, at least up to the middle of the 70s, there was no impact, no change whatsoever between the generations. It's the only prejudice, we tested a dozen prejudices which are very strong in Austrian society, and it's the only one which did not change over time and between the generations. Now, in the last 10 years or so, we had some change, but it's still slower than with all the other prejudices.
You mean the others changed more, but did not change according to the
generation? Sorry?
Yes.
So he would like the younger generation in general becomes more tolerant, except with regard to Jews. But now there's some change, but it's much less than with other prejudices. You have this, what I call anti-Semitism without anti-Semites. It has many, many very strange aspects. For example, it's a kind of everyday cultural sedimented prejudice. It's not official, it's not outspoken, it's very latent. So for example, it's all this talk in terms of Nazi categories, like he's a quarter of a Jew, he's a half Jew, which doesn't make any sense outside the racist framework. This is very, very strongly embedded within the Austrian society, within the Austrian culture. This goes on. For example, if you don't like a person, you make him a Jew. This is all time and again, it's used during election campaigns. People are made Jews by, so to speak, secret propaganda of the opponent party. If you don't like certain types of behavior, you make them Jewish, so to speak. When I came to...
You can go on, your 5 minutes are up, but you can go on.
Okay, I tell you the story. When I came to this conference, I went to the airport. I was very busy because the plane was... I had to reach the bus. It was 5 minutes before. And I couldn't pass the street because there was a person unloading his package. And I said, well, please, could you move away? I'm very busy. I have to reach my plane. I said, Nuka Yiddish Hast, he said. He was a worker. I'm sure he never met. He doesn't even know what Yiddish is. He said, Nuka Yiddish Hast. I said, what does this have to do with Yiddish? I asked him. He said, well, if you're so pushy, what else is it if you're so pushy? So, you know, that's the. So I said to him, he's blöder Kerl.
Was it a young man or an old man? Was it a young
man? He was in the mid-30s or so. So this is the type of things you find. Well, one thing, the attitudes toward Israel. For a long time, you had, and this brings in the question of immigration of Soviet Jews, which is, as you know, advocated, organized, managed, helped by Chancellor Kreisky, which is not very popular within Austrian society. It relates to the Middle East conflict, and it relates to the question, the relationship of anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism. For a long time, Israel was extremely popular extremely popular within the Austrian political culture. So we had overwhelming siding with the Israeli side against the Arabs in the Middle East conflict. It was 86% of the Austrians said Israel deserves appreciation and sympathy versus Israel rejected. It was only 7% who rejected Israel in 76, still in 76, with 86% of sympathy versus 7% of rejection. About half of the Austrians siding explicitly with Israel, about half of them, almost half of them neutral, only 9% siding with the Arabs. Now the impact of the Lebanon, well, and then there was a kind of distinction between Israelis and Jews. Israelis are the good Jews, so to speak, well, the Jews in the diaspora are the bad ones. And they, Austrians, out of their anti-Semitic traditions, partly, as we found out by the depth interviews, very strongly identified with the strong, so to speak, German-like Israelis. And you had this slow an impact of attitudes towards Israel. This had an impact on attitudes towards the Jews, it has a positive impact, a small one, but a positive and continuous impact. Now, about 5 years or so, we have a dramatic change in this. For the first time, you have a stronger identification of Jews and Israelis again. It's not distinguished that much any longer. We can speculate about what the reason for this are. And especially since the Lebanon War, you had an absolutely dramatic change of attitudes. There's a slow change the years before, but this was a kind of focus of dramatic change was the war in Lebanon. Now, for the first time ever, I have the recent data of last week. Last week we had the most recent survey, and now it's 35% siding with the Arabs in the Middle East conflict, 23% siding with Israel, and 42% saying, well, we can't answer this, we don't know, we are neutral. We're undecided, so to speak, or having split loyalties. This is really a dramatic change. And you have people saying, well, the impact of the war of Lebanon, in Lebanon, worsened our attitudes towards Jews, towards Israel. Towards Israel, it's 46% who said it worsened our attitudes towards Israel, while 49% said it's equal than before. And it had 24% said it worsened our attitudes towards Jews as well, although people claim to distinguish, to be able to distinguish. So this is a very negative and sad change. I can show you the graphs. I mean, can pass them through. It's very easy to understand, even if you don't read German. And what we found is this. With regard to Israel, the more conservative part, the people voting for the more conservative parties are still more in favor of Israel, while the leftist parties are much more hostile towards Israel, but less anti-Semitic. And this is a very interesting phenomenon. Because what we found first was that in all this anti-Zionism, in a society which has such strong anti-Semitic traditions, of course, it's always fused with anti-Semitism. You don't find, like in the third world countries, not having this anti-Semitic traditions. But on the other hand, if you look at who is going to be especially hostile towards Israel, it's the old anti-Semitic groups, which now seem to have kind of legitimation to revive their old prejudice, and it's well, this is very clear. I mean, again, I can show around the graphs. So you have, obviously, people on the left distinguish between Israel and Jews, not so people on the right, in the political spectrum. One last thing, the attack on the synagogue in Vienna 2 years ago, 1.5 years ago, had a strong impact too, because Chancellor Kreisky's foreign policy up to then were followed by the overwhelming majority of the Austrians. Whatever he said, he was followed. Now, for the first time, we found that people were very insecure, very fed up. They were ashamed, they were shocked, they condemned this, and especially they were disgusted with Kreisky's comments on this, blaming the Israelis for being too intransigent, too rigid, for being indirectly responsible for this attack. And they were this really caused a change in public opinion. The episode, as well as the ununderstandable reaction of Chancellor Kreisky. And now what we have is that only a third of the population any longer considers his Middle East policies to be successful, while most people say they don't know. They feel very uneasy, undecided about it. So there is the possibility for a change because people do not follow these policies any longer. And they say it doesn't help anybody. 3% say it helps Israel, 13% say it helps the Palestinians, 18% say it helps the Austrians, but almost 70% say it doesn't help anybody, or they don't know whose favor it is. So this is really a strong switch again in public opinion during the last 2 years. So, let me stop here and I just pass this around here.
Thank you very much. And I thank you for this very thorough analysis, including the basically scientific approach. I would like now to ask Maurice Einhorn.
Yes. I'm sorry, my approach is less scientific. I have no graphs, no real science. First of all, it's difficult to give one unique picture of anti-Semitism in Belgium, because Belgium is made of two very, very distinct parts, which is the Flemish part and the Wallonie-French-speaking part. And in all aspects, they are very, very different. There is a kind of, atmosphere of pre-civilian war, I would say, because all the problems are being aggravated in Belgium by this conflict between the two communities in Belgium. I would say there are about 30,000 Jews in Belgium in a population of 10 million people, which is also very small. But I wouldn't say Belgium is a people without Jews, because the physical presence of Jews has much more weight than percentage would believe. Very, very big majority of the Jews are concentrated in two cities. I would say more than 95% of the Jews are either living in Brussels or in Antwerp. I think the most interesting problem is the problem of the Jews living in Antwerp, which means in the Flemish part of Belgium. These Jews represent about 15,000 people on a total of 1 million, which is a very small percentage. But I could say there is something very special about this community. According to me, it's the last very authentic ghetto in the world today, because there are comparisons which are made very often between, for instance, Antwerp and New York, but it doesn't work, according to me, because I would tell you one cipher which is very clear. I just learned this a few days ago, that there are 3,300 children, Jewish children in Antwerp. There's only 300 of these children going in non-Jewish schools, which is a very, I'm sure, the highest percentage.
3,300.
Yes, 10% of the children going in non-Jewish schools, which is a very, very fantastic percentage, I believe.
Yes,
it's unbelievable.
Comparable
with every else in the world. I believe something very special is that this community is very close. The exchanges between the Jewish community and the outside world are very, very minimal. Jews having their own schools, own stores, everything is close inside this community. And the context between the Jewish community and the outside world is very, very small. The Jews are having their own places where they take vacations in Belgium and so on. I would, in one word, I would qualify for the moment the relations of the Jewish community and the Flemish community in Belgium as a, which I call, I don't know the exact word in English, coexistence pacifique.
Peaceful
coexistence, like you could have spoken of between American and Russians a few years ago, which is a state of latent hostility, but which is not very clearly spoken out. There are a few specific factors in the case of Antwerp, which is first of all that the Jewish community in Antwerp speaks French, while the other people in this part of the country speak Flemish. And it's not only a curiosity, it's a very important factor, because French-speaking people in generally are considered as enemies, more or less, in this part of the country. So, in some kind of a way, Jews are considered as a part of this enemy-like column inside this Flemish nation. Also, there is the very specific factor of what has been happening during the war. While the Flemish nationalism has been developing itself during the beginning of the 19th century and beginning of the 20th century, during the First World War and even more during the Second World War, a large part of the Flemish movement has been considering the Germans as objective allies for reaching their purpose. So the collaboration between the Flemish and the Germans has been very important during the war. And this is some kind of a permanent object of conflict between the Jewish community in Antwerp and the Flemish community. One other point is that there is no the Jews in Antwerp don't try to come out in the Belgian community. It shows best in two different fields. First of all, in politics, there isn't any real involvement of Jews in the Belgian politics, and even if some of the Belgian Jews go in politics, it's almost all the time to act as a kind of representative of Jewish interests inside the Belgian community. Secondly, in the field of arts, it's also very clear that there is absolutely, at least in the Flemish part of the country, there is no involvement of Jews in the Flemish culture. I could say there is a very, I feel that there's a very strong anti-Semitism in the Flemish community, but which I must say is never encouraged by official authorities. It's almost considered as something very shameful. It's always condemned. But it's, for instance, very interesting to have read the reactions of the press after the bombing of a synagogue in Antwerp. The commentaries were always more or less that Arabs and Jews fight their war somewhere else. And it's been always spoken of innocent victims when there were Flemish people killed in those bombings instead of Jews. So that it's something very, you feel something that can, that could come out very strongly one day or the other, even if now it's not absolutely not encouraged from above. Secondly, I could say that the war in Lebanon has had a very strong influence on the evolution of anti-Semitism, because, for instance, take a comparison, that French people have been very shocked by the attitude of radio, television and press in their commentaries about the Lebanon war. I believe it's been very, very worse in Belgium, because there has been a climate of anti-Zionism in, for instance, the Belgian radio, which has been fantastic. And it, sometimes it even came out as really anti-Semitism. And it's, anyway, feeling very, very strongly by the Jews in Belgium. For instance, when there has been a bombing in the synagogue in Brussels, there has been a crew of the Belgian television, and they have been really attacked by the Jews who stand by nearby the synagogue as really enemies of the Jewish people. I believe there is some, there has been some exaggeration in this reaction, because there's some members of the Belgian community, Jewish community in Belgium, feel any criticism about Israel as a direct attack against Jews. I believe even if you take a more moderate point of view, it's really getting a very serious problem in Belgium.
What about the Brussels part?
Yes,
yes, in the Brussels part, the problem is less strong. The problem, the Jewish community in Brussels is infinitely more less close than the Antwerp one. There are a lot of, I said that mariage mixed marriage in Brussels, while there's, I believe, maybe 10 a year in Antwerp, maybe less than that. There is really a part of the Brussels Jews who have chosen for assimilation, which has never been the case in Antwerp. The factors that play also a part in Brussels is, of course, the attitude toward the war in Lebanon. But anti-Semitism as a factor of everyday life is very weak, I must admit, in Brussels.
Fully or reluctant.
I think you recognize very well this unique dichotomy that exists in Belgium between the two communities, which no other European country exists. I would like to ask the Danish representative.
The Jews in Denmark is also a very small community, numbering no more than 8,000 persons out of a population of 5 million. In general, one must say that the relationship between the Jews and the non-Jews in Denmark for a very, very long time has been very good, and there's been no problems. However, in my opinion, there has been a change to the worse during the last couple of years. A number of local events has happened in Denmark, which has played some role. I've taken them out of the general analysis because they are local, but we've had conflict within the Jewish community, which of course caused some confusion and bitterness within the Jews and some disappointment within the non-Jews. We've had a lawsuit of anti-Zionism, anti-Semitism, which our enemies won, and which had the effect of making the anti-Zionist cause much more legitimate, much more recognized. We've had the Holocaust TV series.
Specify what this lawsuit?
Yes, what happened was that a person from a very leftist party, the only party in the Danish parliament which advocates that Israel should not exist, sued a man who's a non-Jew because he said that this party was carrying out anti-Semitic practices. And what happened was that one person, one of the very few persons of this party who does not have had, but has no anti-Semitic past, came up and said, "Are you talking about me?" And the other person was stupid. He said, "Yes, you also." Then he went to the courts and he said, "I've never been anti-Semitic. I condemn anti-Semitism. I am only against Israel as a state, but I don't mind Jews, etc." And he won this case. But I must say that it has not had such importance because the press in general was against this leftist party.
On the other hand, it has influenced a number of journalists because they now know that the Danish court has said that it's not applicable to equate the two terms, anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism. And we've also had the Holocaust TV series shown in 1979, which was quite well received and received also a large coverage. But the positive effects of the Holocaust were sabotaged by the Danish TV because they made absolutely no follow-up upon the Holocaust. They were forced to show it. Originally, they had rejected to show it. It was just a typical, quote, American, unquote, piece of sentimental, etc. But then there was a large pressure put upon them by the public, and they had to show it. So they showed it, but they didn't make any follow-up programs. Now, in general, about the level of anti-Semitism in Denmark, there's absolutely no official anti-Semitism, and it is fought in any case where it exists, in any case which could emerge. So I'm not so afraid of that. But there is a change in the relationship between Jews and non-Jews, because today it's much more salonfähig to make statements about Jews, to tell anti-Semitic jokes. What is being said about the Jews is much more harsh, like you have the newspapers talking about Sharon, king of the Jews, his hands are soiled in blood, Begin's concentration camps in Israel, or Begin's Holocaust in Lebanon, etc. And you also have the impression that all Jews are responsible for Israel's actions, and the terms Jews, Zionists, Israelis is used much more interchangeably. Very few Danes know the difference, and even fewer care to make any distinction. So in my opinion, one of the major factors contributing to the escalation of anti-Semitism has been the anti-Zionist and anti-Israeli spillover effects. Now, luckily, we have no tradition for the classical anti-Semitism in Denmark. There are a number of cases, what we call little anti-Semitism, that means the kind of anti-Semitism we meet in the daily life about Jews being especially rich and so on. But there's no physical anti-Semitic situation. You have, to give you an example of what we've been experiencing, is quite a number of letters to the editor saying during the Lebanon War, if I had known what the Jews would do in now, then I would not have helped the Jews during the Second World War. That's really incredible, but there was a lot of them. Now, although the Lebanon War triggered off a wave of these anti-Semitic events, the larger part of them also took place before the war, but the Lebanon War acted as a catalyst in terms of numbers. Of course, these are indications which are more the exception rather than the rule, because in general the climate is good. Now, the Jews in Denmark do not perceive anti-Semitism as a threat, but they do believe it exists, and they do believe that it is increasing. The general impression is one of worry, particularly among the elderly Jews. And most of the Jews meet this increase in anti-Semitism in their daily life. Now they have to walk into the synagogue through the rear entrance rather than the front entrance. They have had a guard duty implemented in front of the synagogue, stricter security measures in the Jewish school, and also very heated discussions at work, where before people would come to the Jews and say, and work and say, that was really a good thing you did in Entebbe, they would now come and say, what a dreadful thing you did in Lebanon, etc. Now, if you take the non-Jews in general, the majority of the non-Jews, a very large part of the non-Jews, would say that anti-Semitism does not exist, and consequently it's not a problem, there's no reason to do anything about it. In general, there's a tendency that the pro-Israeli non-Jews do not manifest themselves so much pro-Israel. I mean, they are more silent, whereas those who are against Israel are much more, saying much more. But when I say anti-Semitism in this sense, in Denmark, when you mention the word anti-Semitism, it is equated only with the classical anti-Semitism, particularly among the young. It's a thing of the past. It's something that Hitler did to the Jews. It does not exist today. And this attitude, of course, is the consequence of lack of knowledge, particularly among the young Jews.
it has had the effect that most of the non-Jews, particularly the young, are indifferent towards Jews, towards Israel. It's not, they don't care what happens. Now, if you take some of the factors which lie behind anti-Semitism, and maybe I should mention that I asked a number of persons in Denmark about their opinion about anti-Semitism in Denmark and factors behind anti-Semitism. Most of these persons immediately answered the war in Lebanon and the policy of the Begin government in Israel as one of the factors behind anti-Semitism. And I am sure that if I ask the Danish public of Hamlet, then they would give the same amount. But I disagree on this point because I believe that it is the perception of Israel's war in Lebanon and the perception of the policies of Begin which create this effect. In other words, if the actions of the Begin government had been the object of a fair and comparative and thorough analysis in the media rather than the campaign which probably took place in all other countries here, then in my opinion the impact of anti-Semitism would have been very much smaller. Now I made a list of a number of factors which in my opinion contribute to anti-Semitism. The most important one is the fact that there is a common ignorance among non-Jews. To an average Dane, a historic event is something which took place within the last 5 years. If it happened 5 years before, it's just forgotten. It has no importance at all. And this means it's very difficult to explain the Jewish cause to the Danes because they don't care about history in general. And since the average Dane has no other means of information about the Jews, about the Middle East, then the media, since there are only 8,000 Jews, it's very few of the Danes who have actual contacts with the Jews. But it means that they're also very vulnerable to any distortions in the media. And the person would never realize that their attitudes are formed by the media, or that they could, that the media could be wrong. And in my opinion, if a person watches the TV, he sees scenes of terror from Shatila and Sabra, and he hears 30 times that Israel is responsible, he would believe that Israel is responsible, and he would believe that it was Israel is solely responsible, because there is nothing else said in this affair. I describe this media campaign against Israel as something which magnifies anything negative that happens in Israel. In other words, if something happens in Israel, doesn't matter what, just as long as it's negative, it would be shown in the media. And there's also a complete lack of anything positive from Israel. There's a complete lack of anything negative from the Arab world. When Assad killed 5,000 people in Hama, there was absolutely nothing in the media. And the final point is that time and time again, the media are emphasizing that the Arabs are moderate and the Jews or Israel is stubborn and hawkish. Now you may say, is this campaign deliberate or not? It's probably both, but it's difficult to decide. But it's very easy to estimate the effects of this campaign, the vilification of the Jewish state. In a situation where most people do not distinguish between Jews and Zionists and Israelis, this has the effect of causing severe anti-Semitic spillover effects. Another point which influences the level of anti-Semitism is the fact that the media's treatment of Israel is the fact that people tend to side with the underdog. And in the first 10 years of the conflict after the Six-Day War, it was perceived as a conflict between the Arabs and Jews, in which the Jews automatically are the underdog, whereas today it is perceived as a conflict between the Jews and the Palestinians, in which the Palestinians automatically are the underdog. And this thing is also reflected in the educational system, partly by a very large number of anti-Israeli, anti-Zionist books in schools, whereas we have very few pro-Israeli ones. And it's also shows in the fact that 50 years ago the topics of the schools were how were the problem of the Jews, how were the problem of the Israel, whereas today it is what is the problem of the Palestinians and what's the problem of the Arabs. In general, you can also say that the economic crisis has decreased the general level of tolerance. However, this has not had so bad effect in Denmark in terms of the Jews, because people tend to direct their the smaller level of tolerance towards the Danish guest workers, which are not, of course, Jews, but nevertheless, they are the ones who are the scapegoats now. One of the things which also play a very important role in the perception of Israel and thereby the perception of Jews in Denmark is the fact that there are a number of Jews who talk towards it, who talk against Israel. And this means that the Danes, they don't really realize that the Jews can hold different opinions. They watch Yasser Arafat on the television, they watch him say that Israel is invading our fascist and extremists. 2 minutes later they see a television on Israel where they see Jews demonstrating in Israel with exactly the same signs, and this of course makes people think that Arafat is right. It's very, very few people who realize that what they are witnessing is an example of Israel's democracy. The huge majority will conclude that Arafat must be right. Now, I mentioned that also the war in Lebanon and the Begin government, or rather the perception of the war in Lebanon and the perception of the Begin government makes an impact, and especially the media has mentioned Israel's responsibility in the war so frequently that it's very common to meet people who believe that it was the Israelis who committed the massacres in these refugee camps. Also, I'm afraid that apart from the Khomeini government, I think Begin government is probably the most hated government in terms of journalists. If they can in any way give the Begin government a bash, they will do it. Because they perceive it as being hardline, stubborn, provocative, etc. A short list of the most disliked actions which the Danish public and many Jews also do not understand is the Lebanon war, particularly the bombing of the Beirut, the policy of settlements, the bombing of the Iraqi nuclear reactor, mentioning the Wehrmacht past of the former German Chancellor Schmidt, references to Holocaust, the immediate no to Reagan's peace plan, cooperation or the perceived cooperation with South Africa, etc. Now this list should not be taken as an expression of my own opinion, but as an expression of items which persons, which general public in Denmark do not understand, do not like, and therefore which influences their policy towards Israel, and in this way also influences the policy towards Jews because people do not distinguish between them. And if you take the almost total lack of explanation, understanding in the media, it would be a miracle if the public could perceive the Begin government any differently, because they know nothing else. Now, I've also had to mention something about the expectations of the Israeli democracy, because there is a wide tendency in Denmark to demand more from Israel than from other states, because Israel is a democracy. Israel is perceived as being a member of the family, and a member of the democratic family. You can compare the situation to the situation in which a father tells his son how you have to behave. And of course, sooner or later, the son will revolt against this and say, you go take a swim or whatever, because I want to do it the way I think is correct. I also have to mention the economic crisis and the policy, the oil policy of the West. There's been a general degrading of the level of tolerance towards minorities. It can be felt in Denmark also, but it is directed towards the foreign workers, which I mentioned. The politicians also submit to the Arab people pressure. For instance, the film on the death of the Saudi princess was originally scheduled to appear, but they took it off because it was afraid to close of the sheikh. They would never admit that that was why. They would say it was a typically British sensationalist reportage, but that's the effect of it. Now, it has some effect on anti-Semitism, but the effect is indirect because it prevents focusing on the Arab side, and this combined with the over-focusing on the Israeli side gives people the impression that Israel is the only crook in this part of the world. In fact, the world is total. If you look at the public opinion polls on Israel, we don't have too many of them, but there are a number of public opinion institutes which ask these questions. You can see that there is a very clear tendency that Israel seems to lose about 2.2% sympathy.